This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop.
The thing that has most animated this election on the Democratic side has been the sense of a rigged system.
The game is rigged against them.
So there's a sense the game is rigged.
This is what a rigged economy is about.
A rigged system.
They'll do anything to rig the system for most of the time.
The game is rigged against a lot of people who have done their dead level best.
That the system is rigged.
People say the game is rigged.
Keeps the system rigged for those at the top.
The system is rigged.
Their obstruction is keeping a system that is rigged.
The game is rigged.
We must fix an economy in America that is rigged.
The game is rigged, and it's not right.
A rigged economy.
The game is rigged.
And the economy is rigged.
The American people know that the system is rigged against them.
The system rigged against the middle class.
All I know, it is rigged. It's still rigged.
Too many people feel like the system is rigged.
People say the game is rigged.
How the game is rigged.
Our economy is rigged.
People feel like the system is rigged against them. And here's the painful part. They're right.
You know, the system, folks, is rigged. It's a rigged system.
Our presidential election came down to one state where the brother of the man running for president was the governor of the state. So we have our problems, too.
Okay. I guess, you know, if she brings that point up in talking about Florida, you know, if Republicans bring anything up from history that, you know, could be questionable, it's like, how dare they? I mean, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Republicans are accused of wearing tinfoil hats, but she's not by making that statement. I mean, look at, they went through the process, they counted the votes, Chads went through all this stuff, and they still want to bring this up. You know, but it's kind of ironic, Scott, that in that montage, most of the people saying the system is rigged is Democrats, right?
I believe there's only one Republican in there,
right.
And it was Donald.
Yeah, Donald. So all the Democrats are saying it's rigged, and, you know, and that's the deal. I mean, this is why the populace is revolting. Is everyday Americans who sit at their coffee table in their kitchen tables trying to figure out what to do with the economy and how many extra jobs they got to work this year in order to, you know, pay for the kids and, you know, keep up with things and keep food on the table and all that essential kind of stuff, you know? Yeah. And they're the ones that are saying, hey, it looks like, talks like, you know, walks like.
It might be.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You know, James O'Keefe came out with his video.
Those are powerful.
Which he had, there's two of them that have been released. Both some vulgar language in them. Very very well done. He gets a really great story.
Yeah, but vulgar language from Democrats too.
Oh,
by the way.
Oh yeah, yeah. But they, you know, they've come out now and said, you know, well, none of that's true. You know, those people spoke out of turn. But everybody that is in the video, that said anything in the video, they've released.
Mm-hmm.
They've either let go or fired.
Yeah.
Or they resigned. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
some of them resigned.
Yeah, but they talked about in the video about this wall, this double wall that they had set up to where, you know, there wasn't a direct connection that there could be plausible deniability. Well, they pulled back the curtain, and so now plausible deniability has to be challenged. So what do they have to do? They got to take one for the team. You know, they're out. You know, they exposed themselves. And so they can no longer play their reindeer games. But you think there's somebody else or there's not another team?
I think my
somewhere else doing the same thing.
Part of the video is when he says, oh, no, we don't do the buses anymore. That's too easy to trace. Now we use shell companies and just get rent cars under that company's name. Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, but still, voter fraud doesn't take place, all this stuff, but yet people know differently, and yet the president, the same one that said that, you know, if we like our doctor, we could keep our doctor, tells us, no, there's nothing here. I mean, These guys are like Jedi Knights or something. You don't want. You know, there's nothing here to see. Just move on. Move on, right? The delusion continues. This is Bill Martinez. We're live. We've got more coming up. Stay with us, America.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Hey, it's our dream and our passion, our hope, if this republic is going to survive and our Constitution will continue to live on, ladies and gentlemen, that is that we've got to get this thing back on track. This is at the basis of everything that points to the suffering of so many Americans that is taking place. I mean, not one net breadwinning job, not one net breadwinning job since 2000. This is what David Stockman shared with us a couple of weeks back. I mean, this is the reality of the America that we live in. It is still about the economy, ladies and gentlemen. But before that, it's other things that I'm sure we'll talk about in the coming days. So stay with us. Just about 6 minutes after the top of the hour, our guest, always good to have John Horvat II with us. He's a scholar, researcher, educator, international speaker, author of Return to Order, From a Frenzied Economy to an Organic Christian Society, Where We've Been, How We Got Here, and Where We Need to Go. John, welcome back to Bill Martinez Live. How are you, sir?
Great. Great to be on the show.
Well, America has seen massive unrest in the wake of several tragic deaths at the hands of police officers. Media have done much to dramatize the situation. However, the central point was always the facts. It's kind of like when I was growing up, John, we used to have Joe Friday. He always just said, give me the facts, ma'am. Just give me the facts. But we've missed something since then, haven't we?
Right, right. Police incidents like the ones that have come up will always happen and have always happened. It's nothing new. But before, what happened was that these cases went to the courts, and the courts decided based on the facts. And what we're now seeing, I think, is that this whole police war has become a battle of symbols. And that's, I think, a much, much more powerful medium, and it's also more dangerous.
Well, it short circuits the process, doesn't it? I mean, we're supposed to have due process. If we use a symbol, then we're not getting the whole truth and nothing, but we're just emotionally reacting to our own perception and what we believe to be so, absence of the fact.
Right. Yeah, the facts will eventually come out, and usually they do. But in the meantime, you have, you know, the symbolic hands up, don't shoot, you know, things circulating inside the press. And they don't stop, and they get a jump on the facts, and they take over the narrative. So it is something I think we have to consider. We can't just fight only in the facts. We have to also deal with symbols.
Well, I guess the question that mainstream America would ask is, why is the media complicit in this false narrative?
Well, it's a typical narrative of the liberal establishment that everyone knows. It's, you know, the class struggle idea of oppressed and oppressors, you know, that it's politically incorrect to deny the narrative, but it's really not the reality on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the police are Americans just like we are. They have their own lives. They have nothing against those who they have to keep order with, but you know, it's they create this narrative, and it's hard to get off of it.
Yeah, I mean, they've created this, and they've put the police in danger. I mean, here it is. Almost daily, we're seeing reports on TV where police are being ambushed, and it's not just some jihad goal or a pronouncement. I mean, yes, there's some, you know, there's some bad actors here that you would cite from the international stage that have come into our, you know, come into our neighborhoods. But yet there's others that are just revolting because the perception that they have is that things are not fair.
Right. And it is a very unfair analysis, because it's many times it's easy to blame other people for things. But, sometimes the blame has to go on the person themselves, because they are not doing what they should do, not helping the social structures of life.
Well, and this is a tough thing, because what happens is perception becomes reality. And in this battle of symbols that you cite, now all of a sudden we've got to overcome the symbol before we get down to, you know, the real source of the problem, don't we? It just kind of convolutes the issue.
It does. It does very much so. And it is. And social revolutionaries have always used symbols because they are extremely powerful, especially in the wrong hands.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can represent an ideal and not the defects of that ideal. You know, the flag represents what we hold proud of America, but doesn't necessarily represent the defects that we want to work on and make better. So in the same way, their symbols are very much like that. You know, they have their own way of doing things that just highlights their ideal and not their defects.
Mm-hmm. So what are the protesters symbolizing here, John?
Well, they're obviously symbolizing the oppressed, those who are the unfairness of society, the injustice, you know, the whole bit.
Mm-hmm. They're the 99% versus the 1%.
I guess so. Yeah.
Uh-huh, so to speak.
And the police are the lackeys of the 1%, according to this whole thing. And it's of course not true. I mean, so much of this is manufactured and a way of putting the blame on others.
Well, you say that symbolization has been something that has been going on for years and years, and probably since the time of man coming on this earth.
Right.
Symbols have had their impact, and it's interesting to appreciate what your thesis here and what you're explaining to us is that symbols are very powerful, and we're just not understanding them. Maybe because we don't relate to them, but meanwhile they create a groundswell.
Right, exactly. It is exactly that. I mean, the symbol of the cross is the symbol of Christianity, and it's extremely powerful, you know,
right.
And it represents so much. In a similar way, you know, the social revolutionaries have used, red flags or Black Lives Matter is a type of symbolism.
Yeah, the ISIS flag. I mean, on and on.
ISIS flag,
exactly.
Terrifying, but it certainly conveys a lot.
So what can the police do to counter the symbols that are being used against them, John?
Well, the only way to effectively fight a symbol is with another symbol, because then you're fighting on the same ground. And, you know, I think the police have a very, very attractive narrative. Americans like heroes, and they have a symbol, the symbol of the badge, not as an oppressive symbol, but as a protective symbol.
Right.
And if they could shape their own narrative in that way, I think they would be a lot more effective in fighting against this whole thing.
So has anything woke you up in the middle of the night, said this is what they should use?
No, I don't have an actual symbol. And usually, you know, a lot of times symbols are very organic. They sometimes you just can't just manufacture them or have a template. The symbol of the blue strip or on the badge, you know, that's genial, and it's something that came up, you know, just very naturally. I think those are the kind of things we need.
And of course, we're seeing symbols on the political stage, and it would seem that one Donald Trump needs a stronger symbol right now.
Well, maybe so. Yeah, I mean, these are things that are part of the whole narrative. The symbol also of the quarterback, you know, kneeling, you know, these are all symbolic things that really are powerful.
Well, I'll tell you, the conversation will continue. You bring in some brilliant insight here, John, and I appreciate you coming on. John Horvath II, scholar, researcher, educator, international speaker, author of Return to Order, From a Frenzied Economy to an Organic Christian Society. Book is available at all the usual places, right, John?
Yes, and on Amazon today, you can get a free Kindle edition today only.
So go, jump on it. All right, thank you, John.
There is an affordable alternative to the high cost of healthcare that offers freedom from insurance while providing compliance with the Obamacare individual mandates. Imagine having access to quality, affordable healthcare that allows you the freedom to choose your doctor and hospital. Members can share up to 100% of necessary medical expenses, including some alternative treatments. Find out how you and your family can contain healthcare costs without giving up your freedom. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
My name is Lean. I'm 41. I've been using One World Wave for 2.5 years now. I suffered a bulged L4 and L5 disc from a car accident 3 years ago, and since that time I've been unable to walk long distances, do any minor lifting, or just normal activities with my children without having severe back pain. Since I've started using One World Way, I've been able to walk more, engage in activities with my children, and have less lower back pain. One World Way has helped me regain back my strength, confidence, and have a healthier life. I've noticed a weight loss of about 20 pounds, my A1C dropped 2 points, and I have more energy now. One World Way has helped me regain back my life.
The results for clients on One World Way have surpassed the results for most any other supplements, as well as all other whey protein powders. One World Way is non-denatured and frequency encoded. We believe the frequency encoding increases your body's production of glutathione and energy production. Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworldway.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Your program, your calls, your opinions. Bill Martinez, live.
Hey, it's just the way you like it, ladies and gentlemen. Coming at you fresh every day for 3 hours, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. I am Bill Martinez. For more information on the show, BillMartinezLive.com. That's where you want to go. You know, it seems that social media has become so pervasive and such a part of our culture and way of life. It's hard to imagine when it didn't exist, right? But when you think about it, it has not been that long, but it is so much part of our life and our lifestyle. that it even needs to be considered, according to the latest data here, in terms of the issue of cancer disclosure at work. Now, a new survey results reveal that 90% of cancer survivors disclose their diagnosis to someone at work. 64% found that talking with coworkers about their experience helps them cope, up from 51% in 2015. While it's important that cancer survivors get the support they need from their colleagues, it's also important that they weigh their options carefully before disclosing. I mean, there's such a thing as privacy, right? I mean, that's why you have HIPAA laws going on. Well, social media adds another layer of considerations to cancer survivors' decision-making around disclosure. The same survey found that one-third, and this amazed me, 34% of social media users disclosed their diagnosis online. 7 in 10, 71% working cancer survivors use social media weekly or more often. These are incredible numbers. And here to help us understand even more so is Sonia Kashuk. She's a cancer survivor and founder of Sonia Kashuk Beauty, and Rebecca Ellis, chief mission officer with Cancer and Careers. Sonia, Rebecca, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Good. Great. How are you?
Well, I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on and helping us understand. I mean, this is really amazing. You know, social media has become so accepted. We're so casual about it that we're just opening up our private lives to everybody. I mean, not just family. I mean, social media is like it goes to the entire world, right?
Exactly.
Well, let me ask you, Rebecca, first, why is the topic of cancer in the workplace important today?
Well, I think the first reason on a super broad level is, you know, 1.6 million or so people are diagnosed with cancer every year. So the number of those people who are working is also very high. So we're seeing this as something that's coming into the workplace no matter what. And then the second piece of that is, of course, the individual person and their needs and their wants in relationship to their job while also facing a cancer diagnosis. So finding a way to support them and help shape the universe that they're in so that they can get what they need from their job, from their treatment, from their family is really important.
Exactly. And Sonia, as a cancer survivor yourself, you realized that continuing to work was important for you.
Oh, I think it is one of the most important factors when going through this. For me, it gives you routine, it gives you normalcy, it gives you something else to think about. And it's probably my one piece of advice I give to those that are able to do it, is it's truly the best thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
so,
you know,
okay.
You leave a treatment and you have, you know, right away, if you're not feeling great, your mind goes into something busy and something else completely. So it's super, super, super important and helpful.
Well, yeah, as you reference here, there are definite benefits to working during and after treatment, even though, you know, some of these treatments can be rough and really take you down. You probably found it, maybe adrenaline picks up, whatever, your mind is altered to such a degree to not focus on feeling so bad that now you gotta go to work, right?
Exactly. I just think it takes you from, you know, if you're thinking how terrible you feel, you don't have time to think about how terrible you feel. You shift gears. Mm-hmm. And I think that shifting of gears is super helpful because also it's like your life is going onward. You're not just living life as a cancer patient. You are living life in its fullest form because you are engaged in work. You're engaged in hopefully with your family. And so if cancer becomes a part of your life, it is not consuming your life.
Work, in a sense, becomes a positive distraction, doesn't it, Rebecca?
It does. And what everything that Sonia has said has actually been backed up by the data that we've collected over the years, including in our most recent survey this year, where 87% of cancer patients said working helped them in some way, from feeling normal, the routine, as Sonia mentioned, feeling productive, keeping their mind off it. So we're hearing this widely. In fact, 73% of cancer patients and survivors that we surveyed said they wanted to work.
Mm. Well, I can tell you, it kind of reminds me a little bit like if you remember that movie, All That Jazz with Bob Fosse, and there was that recurring deal, you know, Showtime. And and being in radio, I can tell you, you know, part of what goes on. I mean, nobody cares about what is going on in my personal life. And whenever I would come into the studio, this is something I just learned early on. I guess maybe it was just a survival instinct. Whatever problems I had at that moment and that day I was dealing with, I left them on the door handle of that, you know, that outside door at the radio station. Because I couldn't bring them on. I mean, it wasn't like I could come on the air and be like Lenny Bruce and be complaining about stuff. I mean, it's showtime, right?
Right. Exactly.
Well, so help us understand, you know, the pros and cons, as you saw based on the survey, to disclosing your cancer diagnosis at work and online.
So it's going to be totally unique to each person in the same way that a cancer diagnosis and the following treatment is totally unique. Everyone's workplace, their role within it, their specific job are totally unique. So what we want to help people do is figure out what their best path forward is, taking into consideration the specificity and uniqueness of their circumstances. So for some people, disclosing at work is going to be a totally natural thing to do. It's going to be important for their sense of self and their support system and to get access to all the things that they might have access to that will make it easier to be at work.
Exactly.
When you're thinking about the online space, it becomes a little bit different because when we first started talking about disclosure, we really meant your friends, your family, and your workplace. And those were verbal conversations.
Right.
They weren't happening sort of over the internet.
Yes.
And now they're happening over the internet. So someone who is choosing not to disclose widely at work but is posting about it on Facebook has a real complexity there because Facebook isn't designed to be a locked down website. So it's possible that that information they're sharing will get back to someone that they work with. So
exactly.
We just want people to make good, mindful decisions.
Now, Sonia, you decided to share your cancer with people at work. How did you come about that decision?
I think for me, again, it's a very personal thing, but that was super helpful for me. And that made me feel better, like to share as much of my story with, if I could impact someone else's life and in a positive way, I found it to be super healing and empowering for me to take something that might be a negative. And, you know, and it's weird, like, yes, it's a difficult thing to go through, but the opportunity to share your story and to be positive and help someone else, it was really a very positive experience. And then also getting involved with cancer and careers has also been incredibly rewarding. So, you know, whenever we can take something that could be a detour or something difficult in our life and turn it into something positive, super empowering. And there's reason for why we go through things in our life. And if at the end we can make someone else's life better, it's right.
Well, it says a lot about the team that you were working with, Sonia, as Rebecca alluded to. You know, there's some businesses that cannot handle this kind of stuff. And even the people that you work with cannot handle this kind of bad news. So it says a lot about the people that you work with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, some people just don't know how to deal. When something difficult or, you know, out of the norm comes up, everything, you know, it's like, oh, straightforward, it can be disruptive and people get very uncomfortable.
Exactly.
And so I guess you try to make the path as comfortable and as normal and deal with things as real life. This is real stuff that happens.
Okay, well, we have to leave it there. Rebecca, I'm going to allow you to kind of wrap things up for us. We got about 10 seconds. Tell everybody where they can go for more information, if you would, please.
Cancer and Careers' website, cancerandcareers.org, will open the door to all of our free programs and services.
Sonia and Rebecca, thank you so much for being with us on Bill Martinez Live.
Having a place to go after school will make you a better student. Having an outlet to express yourself will make you a better artist. Having something to do together will make you a better family. At The Y, we're helping build better friends, listeners, writers, swimmers, scientists, and musicians, one chance at a time. Give the gift of opportunity. Donate to The Y at ymca.net/give. The Y. for a better us.
On April 20th, 1999,
America and the world mourns as the biggest school shooting in U.S. history took place today at Columbine High School.
Rachel Joy Scott's life was taken, but her story lives on.
I want to be a light, but it feels so dark.
Discover the courage to stand up.
Jesus gave his life for me, and I'll give my life to him.
I'm Not Ashamed, rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters October 21st. For tickets and showtimes, go to imnotashamedfilm.com.
According to the Mayo Clinic, your bones are continuously changing. New bone is made and old bone is broken down. Now, when you're young, your body makes new bone faster than it breaks down old bone, and your bone mass increases. Makes sense, doesn't it? Most people reach their peak bone mass at around 30. After that, bone remodeling continues, but you lose slightly more bone mass than you gain. Now, how likely you are to develop osteoporosis, a condition that causes bones to become weak and brittle, depends on how much bone mass you attain by the time you reach age 30 and how rapidly you lose it after that. The higher your peak bone mass, the more bone you have in the bank, and the less likely you are to develop osteoporosis as you age. Well, at Bill Martinez Live, we focus on absorbability of bone-building calcium, magnesium, vitamin D3, and boron. Try our 98% healthy body, bone, and joint pack. Find us at BillMartinezLive.com, Youngevity, or call 855-305-8326.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Cal Bend Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FIVESTARSOAP.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
Hey, millennials. Know what you believe and why. Bill Martinez Live.
When you don't move the mountain, I'm leading you to move. When you don't part the water, I wish I could walk through. When you don't give the answers, as I cry out to you, I will trust, I will trust, I will trust in you.
Bill Martinez Live.
Welcome back, America. For more information on the show, go to BillMartinezLive.com. It is all right there. All our past interviews that you can share, gladly. They're absolutely with our compliments. Enjoy them. Podcast them at your convenience. Enjoy it all right there. And there's all kinds of ways you can connect with us, along with our affiliates, over 280 markets across this country, around the world, via shortwave as well. This next story is amazing. It's how to choose the moments that define your life. And those moments happen. And I understand they can be so profound and they knock you off balance. But there's always the right choice in the midst of the moments that you experience. Now, imagine a young girl living in a Soviet post-war society full of persecution, injustice, and despair. And she takes a leap of faith by defecting at the age of 17 and leaving everything and everyone behind to live a life of freedom. This is the story of Sabine Eckhart. She's the author of the book That Was the Moment, and it chronicles her life as a young child growing up in Nazi Germany and Soviet-controlled East Germany, where nearly every aspect of her life was controlled by the government. Sabine Eckhart, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, great to have you here to talk about your story, the moments that defined your life. I mean, at the age of 17, you had experienced, this post-war society, Soviet post-war society. You were oppressed, and you see a shining light on the horizon, and you go to that light of freedom.
That's exactly what I did. I came to a point when my brother had defected 4 years earlier, and I just could see no way out living under communism. So one day I decided, you know, I went to the government, the city hall, because you can't just leave, but I wanted to make it a little bit easier on me. And I went to city hall. I said, my brother's getting married in West Germany. Nobody can visit him. Can you please give me permission? They give you permission for about 2 weeks. You have to leave your passport behind. You're literally a person without a country. And that way, they want to make sure that you're going to return back to East Germany after you visited the West.
So how do you keep moving forward from there without a passport?
Well, you get temporary papers, and I took a train. I wanted to go to Munich originally, and I took a train from Naumburg, that's in the middle part of Germany, close to Halle and Leipzig, and I took a train first to Halle, which was a little bit east toward Berlin, and then I went in the opposite direction to go to Munich. You will continuously, while you're sitting on the train going to the west, you will be controlled by the east and the Russian police, you know, always with rifles ready, and they're constantly checking you. I was not allowed to take more than 15 marks with me, but as I said, the government wanted to be sure that I would return. But
and of course, you're leaving with a limited amount of luggage, right? I mean, you can't make it real obvious here, so you're lucky to have a toothbrush and a hairbrush with you.
That's exactly just about as it came to. And I don't want to sound like telling people or listeners, be so kind, write the book, but I can't. That's really the moment when I took the train. I was the one stop before the western city of Munich when a soldier came straight at me and he said, you get off the train. And then I knew, because all my papers were in order, that there was nothing wrong with my papers. But that was the moment when I decided to defect.
So that was your moment that you had to come to. I mean, in a sense, you were kind of already leaning that way, but that was the convincing moment to say that you were moving in the right direction.
But you had to get across the border, literally across the street, okay? And if a Russian or even a German soldier tells you get off the train, you walk over there in that little house. There was a little house, usually the kind that they use when you erect a new building. You know, it was like a trailer or something. They said, you go into that little house and you wait for us. And I knew right there and then, if I would do that, I would never be heard of again. Either the police or the soldiers would take advantage of me, or if I had to take the chance, if they would send me back, I would surely not be able to sit here and talk to you. I would literally rot in jail.
So what did you do? They've got guns, they've got the authority, you know, they intimidate and everything. So what did you just stayed seated?
You get up. Because you have to get up. If you don't get up, you know, you have a loaded gun right pointing at you, okay?
Right.
So you have to get out. But while I was walking to that little trailer, I decided, this is it. I'm not walking to that trailer. I've got to make a run for it. Mm-hmm. And that's what defined my moment to go to freedom.
So your head, you let them believe that you're heading to the trailer.
Right.
And as soon as you get a chance, you exit stage left, so to speak, and you
literally
head for freedom. Wow. I mean, what must have been beating in your heart at the age of 17, knowing at that point?
But I think it's gutsy, and I think the youth of today really has no idea how fortunate they are that they live in this country, okay? It is not a very long story. It's only a book of 99 pages, so the reader won't get bored, okay? But that was the moment, literally, that was the moment when I decided I'd keep on walking. And there weren't many people around. I mean, where could you go, you know, out literally in no man's land with a little trailer and nothing else, but there was a little forest right adjoined to it, like, you know, a little forest park or something. And that's when I made my run for it. And that decided, and that I detail how I made it to the West.
Well, Sabine, as you alluded to, you say people take freedom for granted. And we do here in the West very much so. And we take it so much for granted right now that we don't even realize that it's under attack, do we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have no idea. I mean, no idea. Because when you live under communism, unfortunately, how they still do in Cuba today and then what is in North Korea, your mind is not your own. Your task is not your own. Nothing is your own. You can think what you like. That nobody can take away from you. But every movement of every day is controlled. And I remember when I was living in the East and my parents were still considered a capitalist because we had a room of and a building of about 18 rooms. Every week, literally, the government would come in. You don't need that much space. You rent that out. You don't need that much space either. You're going to rent it out. And you do it. Because if you don't do it, this is the way communism deals with people. If you don't do it, well, how about if we put you in jail till you decide to do what we are telling you to do? That's what it is.
As you experienced communism, socialism is a slow creep, and sometimes you don't notice it until it's too late. For somebody who has experienced it, who lives now here in America, are you getting some, you know, some bad feelings about the direction that America is on right now?
Well, this is not a political show, but a little bit, yes. I mean, I hope that I'm right, voting for the right person, and I hope most of the people will do as well. But I don't think anybody has any idea what it is to live under either socialism or communism, because you are totally under the control of the government, and most people don't realize that. And that's a sad thing.
Exactly. Well, what advice can you give others who want to make a life-changing decision?
Well, you know, you're confronted in daily life, whether it be going to a new job or getting married or getting a divorce or whatever. You know, most people, I think, will realize, I don't know at what age in their life, but most people will realize, that's it, I've had enough, I can't go on further in whatever stage of life they are in. So it's a sad thing, but in this country, at least, you can do whatever you want. You can move from one city to the other. You don't have to tell anybody. You live under socialism or communism. You can't move just across the street without telling the government you're moving across the street. That's as controlled as it is.
I guess the basis of empowerment is understanding that, first of all, it's your life, right?
But that's not the way they look at it.
No, no. But I mean, it is your life to claim or to give away. Whether, like you say, you're extricating yourself from a very miserable existence or whatever it is, adverse situation that you're dealing with. Sabine Eckert has been our guest. Thank you so much, Sabine, for being with us.
This report is brought to you by Kellogg Company. How do you create 3 billion better days for people around the world? For Kellogg Company, that means fighting hunger and feeding potential each and every day. Chris Charles, Senior Vice President, Kellogg Company.
We share people's passion about where their food comes from, the people who grow and make it, and that there is enough food for everyone. Through our Breakfast for Better Days purpose platform, we're fighting hunger and at the same time partnering with farmers and others who are helping create solutions to these challenges for generations to come. As a global food company, we're committed to doing our part to help feed a growing population with increasingly limited natural resources.
Beyond providing food to food banks and other organizations, Kellogg is also supporting the livelihoods of farmers in communities where their ingredients are grown and helping them to improve their yields through climate-smart agriculture practices and reduce food waste. For more information, visit KelloggCompany.com.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-808-5181. 800-808-5181. 800-808-5181. That's 800-808-5181.
You've been hearing Dr. Wallach talking about 90 essential nutrients, keeping the body healthy.
GCNteam.com now has Beyond Tangy Tangerine tablets. 60 plant-derived minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, packed in a powerful tablet. But that's not it. 160,000 auric points, a knockout punch to free radicals. Call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com. That's 877-878-4203.
Warning, if you've recently declared bankruptcy, you're going to want to change the station. Because there's an alternative to bankruptcy, and it could be faster than you'd ever think possible. But if you've already declared bankruptcy and have missed this opportunity, you'll want to change the station now. Here it is. Right now, the company that has resolved more credit card debt than anyone in the U.S. may be able to settle your debt, too. You could reduce your debt with one low monthly program payment. If you call right now and qualify, Freedom Debt Relief will show you how low your monthly program payment could be for free. Call now. 1-800-557-3965. That's 1-800-557-3965. If you're struggling with debt, this could be your answer. And the bigger your debt, the more money you could save. To find out for free how much of your hard-earned money Freedom Debt Relief could help you save, call now. 1-800-557-3965. 1-800-557-3965. 1-800-557-3965.
Worried about lead, fluoride, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Get a ProPure with the Pro1G 2.0 cleanable reusable filter and remove up to 200 contaminants. Drink water the way nature meant it to be. Clean, crisp, and refreshing. See the complete line of ProPure products, including the new ProMax shower filter. There's a ProPure for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
Stand in the light and be seen as we are.
You're listening to Bill Martinez Live.
This is who I am inside. This is who I am. I'm not gonna hide. Cause the greatest risk we'll ever take is by far. To stand in the light and be seen as we are.
Your program, your calls, your opinions.
Hey, just the way you like it, all about you, America, because that's what it's all about. If we're going to get this country back on track, it's about we the people. Well, we're going to talk about the murder of Sonny Liston right now. It's a daring investigation into the mysterious death of heavyweight champion Sonny Liston by ESPN magazine investigative writer Sean DeSale. It is set against the dawn of the 70s when the mob was fighting to keep control of Las Vegas. Richard Nixon was launching America's first war on heroin, and boxing was in its glory days. The book, The Murder of Sonny Liston, takes a fresh look at the legendary boxer and one of America's most enduring mysteries. You look back on June 29, 1970, this would happen to be the final fight of Sonny Liston's career. He fought Chuck Wepner and left him in need of 100 stitches after a ninth-round TKO in Jersey City. 6 months later, Liston was found dead in his home with heroin in his blood in what Las Vegas police speculated was a drug overdose. Liston's closest friends, however, never bought that. They believed Sonny was murdered, and in the decades since, a cottage industry of theories has hung over his death. Still, no single one has been substantiated. Sean DeSale is with us right now. The book, The Murder of Sonny Liston, Las Vegas Heroin and Heavyweight. Sean, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Bill, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great to have you here. I mean, this is an investigation, I imagine, that keeps you up at all hours of the night, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, I'm obsessed by it. I think you have to be. If you take on the job that I did, which is turn myself into a cold case cop, mm-hmm. and try to solve a crime, you have to. And what was obsessing to me was that the medical examiner report on Sonny's death in January of 1971 said natural causes. Yet heroin metabolites were found in his blood. The cops speculated it was an overdose. Accidental, but the friends of Sonny that I found, and the more reporting I did, the more I believe the preponderance of the evidence suggests that it was indeed murder, hence the title of my book, The Murder of Sonny Liston.
Well, here you are, as you say, you turn yourself into a cold case cop. You're rifling through, all kinds of records, digging deep into old records, conducting extensive, exclusive interviews with cops, politicians, his friends, I mean, you're going deep into this thing. I mean, at some point, did you feel like maybe you might be going a little bit too far? I mean, if this guy was, in fact, murdered, were you setting yourself up to be in a pernicious situation?
You know, you can't think like that. You just have to let the facts take you where they go. And what you need to do in when you have a job like mine is just be as transparent as you can with the facts. What I love about this book and I love about the project was that my idea was to set it in the last year of Sonny's life. And for those who don't know who Sonny Liston was or maybe only vaguely remember, in the 1960s, he was one of the biggest figures on the planet. And this is a time when the heavyweight championship was a crown that was revered. I mean, when Joe Louis and Max Schmeling fought, they were proxies for America and Germany. When Floyd Patterson fought, he was the face of an emerging civil rights movement. Black America was thrilled to have him as their representative.
Right.
You know, a few years later, it would be Muhammad Ali who would become the voice of his generation. You know, Sonny was stuck in the middle of that. It didn't bode well for him because he wasn't an eloquent man. He wasn't an educated man. Nobody wanted him to fight Floyd Patterson, not in white or black America. As a matter of fact, both had a very uneasy relationship with him. You know, I write that his left jab hit with the force of a government crash test, and it did, but it was his eyes. And if you look at the cover of my book, you see those eyes some 40 years later, and
exactly.
They're still chilling. And
right.
He killed his opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And so because he had this uneasy relationship with America, by the time I write about him in Las Vegas in 1970, he's lost to Muhammad Ali twice. He's been disgraced. But he nonetheless is settled into this kind of life that only Las Vegas can breed. And that's what's so exciting to the book about me is that it's both about Sonny and about Las Vegas in a transformational time. And what I did was, the way I started the book, to answer your question, and I'm sorry for being long-winded.
No,
I'm excited.
It's fine. Yeah.
Is that libraries, Bill, are still great places. And the University of Nevada Library sent the Las Vegas Sun and Review Journal to me in New York while I was living there.
Right.
And I looked at every day of every paper for 1970. My wife helped me. And at night, we would talk about it as if we were living in Las Vegas.
1970 all over again. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, exactly.
Wow.
And
mm-hmm.
And what I found and what was crazy was that Las Vegas was an amazing place. The mob was on the run. Corporate interests were coming in. But it was also deeply segregated. Sonny lived in a wonderful white neighborhood with winding streets where the casino executives and the actors lived. And as I write in the book, that neighborhood was created to create the illusion of suburbia in a town where fathers came home at 4 a.m. with sex and booze on their breath.
Yeah.
And there was also a ghetto area on the west side that was ruined by years of urban and civil neglect. Race riots were burning it down. And at night, after Sonny, you know, would wave goodbye to his neighbors on the golf course, he'd drive to that west side where he got into some very dangerous situations. So the fact that Sonny Liston, already a fascinating character to me, bridged the two sides of this amazing world of Las Vegas and did it, Bill, by driving his pink Cadillac down the convertible, down the strip,
right.
Made the whole thing feel so cinematic, but I should say is also highly journalistic. This is a very, very deeply reported book.
Now, was Sonny involved with heroin himself?
Yes, I report in the book that he was, hence heroin in the title. And the reason I found that out was that Sonny was working for a criminal gang as a enforcer. The gang was run, because everybody in Las Vegas seemed to have two lives then, by a famous jazz band leader who was also had his own crime crew, and his son, who later became a famous musician, told me that he would go on collection calls with Sonny, and he also did heroin with Sonny. So I have somebody telling me he did heroin with Sonny, as well as his father did. So yes, Sonny, by other accounts, was also dating a cocktail waitress who was a heroin addict. And for those who think, well, that just doesn't make any sense, how can a fighter be on heroin? We have to remember Sonny only really fought once in the last year of his life, and it was even then the fight went too long. It shouldn't have gone that long. So,
exactly.
Yes, I'm convinced that heroin was a part of Sonny's life.
Well, as you say, after the second fight with then Cassius Clay, he was greatly reduced, but yet he still was a figure. He was still Vegas's hometown guy. As you say, he'd walk down the strip. He's taking pictures. I mean, he's almost a one man chamber of commerce in a sense.
Yes, exactly.
I mean,
he was for a certain kind of Las Vegas.
Yes.
And look, what's great and again endlessly interesting about Sonny to me was that even after those Ali fights, he tried to make a comeback. And you know what? He came darn close.
Right.
Had he not lost a single fight in December of 1970, 1969, Sonny might have clawed his way back. But as I write in the book, that loss, which was completely accidental, was almost existential because Sonny was almost fated to always have bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
The real bad luck, of course, comes in the last few months of his life where I write, and you don't know this until now in the book, that Sonny was the subject of a federal drug sting. And I talked to the lead agent who told me that he had already met with Sonny once to set up a drug buy. And if Sonny hadn't died, he would have done that drug buy and then tried to wire Sonny up and have him rat out his friends. That's the kind of thing that gets people killed.
Exactly.
But you also have never heard that there was a contract out on Sonny's life from a local drug dealer who thought that Sonny had set him up. What you also don't know is that the band leader who had this double life was afraid that Sonny was going to bring him all down and was a suspect in this. But what really sealed it for me came about two-thirds of the way through the reporting when I got an envelope with no return address that had a 170-page transcript of a Las Vegas police informant who a dozen years after Sonny's death pointed the finger at the person I call in the book suspect number one, a hero cop who broke bad. This snitch claimed that this hero cop confessed to him that he killed Sonny Liston. And the last third of the book takes you through what happened when I tracked down that cop and knocked on his door.
And, of course, we've never heard this at all before. So this is all new, and it's in your book, The Murder of Sonny Liston, Las Vegas Heroin and Heavyweight.
And, you know, the research is what I'm the most proud of because besides that archival research, I was able to knock on doors. I was able to speak to people who had never been spoken to. I think one of the great telling facts was I spoke to a former Nevada assemblyman and figure in the NAACP who told me that back in his earlier days, he hung around a liquor store where Sonny would hang out and Sonny would get drunker and boast. And on the eve of Ali's big fight with Joe Frazier, biggest boxing fight in history to that time, Sonny was boasting that he was going to get a cut of the purse. Why? Because he was boasting a deal was struck when he lost to Ali in 1965 that guaranteed him a piece of Ali's future earnings. Now, this is somebody who was there months before Sonny died, who recalls hearing Sonny boast about that. This isn't a theory. This is somebody who was a respected figure quoting Sonny Liston and quoting what he heard. So it's that kind of reporting that I think leads to the title, The Preponderance of the Evidence, I Believe, suggests that murder is more likely than the natural causes or an accidental overdose.
Wow, what a great project and great writing here, Sean, and research to back this up. I know that sports fans, even those that, grew up in, I remember as a little kid, the first Cassius Clay, Sonny Liston fight. And, the braggadocio of one Cassius Clay and how could he possibly beat Sonny Liston, who was so greatly favored that night, right?
Oh, yeah. And, the key thing here is that Sonny took Ali lightly.
Yes.
And he took Ali lightly. And by the time they're in the seventh round, Sonny doesn't expect this fight to go that long at all. His shoulder is killing him. And he goes, no mas, no more.
Really?
Why does he walk away? Because he's guaranteed a second fight. And it's that second fight where his reputation is really sealed.
Exactly. Sean, we got to leave it right there. His book is linked at our website at BillMartinezLive.com. Thank you, Sean.
You're the best, Bill. Thank you.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Investment Rarities, a 43-year-old company, has created the best silver offer ever. Get a U.S. Silver Eagle, Canadian Maple Leaf, Austrian Philharmonic, OPM Pierre Bar, and Silver Round. Have all five for $99 postpaid. You heard me right, 5 ounces of silver below cost. No credit card fees, free shipping. Just $99 and you'll have a great start on what it takes to survive even the worst economic storm. Act now and receive Jim Cook's exclusive paper explaining how it's possible to make a fortune in silver today. Don't miss this opportunity. Call 800-328-1860. Read how the above-ground supply of silver has dropped below even gold. The secret is being suppressed. The price could explode at any time. Call today at 800-328-1860. Get 5 ounces of silver for only $99. Find them on the web at investmentrarities.com or call 800-328-1860. Call now before it's too late. 800-328-1860.
Paid no attorney spokesperson.